We present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a listing from this week's Radio Times, read by Charlotte Green.
Fly Away Home, delightful drama from director Carol Ballard, in which a girl teaches orphan goslings how to fly. Edited for language.
And our thanks to Chris Coatsworth of Kettlesume for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Francis Ween and Fred McCauley. And opposite them on my left, Jeremy Hardy and Andy Hamilton. Well, it's the last in the present series, so we thought we'd kick off with a really big news story. Francis, whose jazz hands are waving goodbye?
Well, I think you're right. This is the most important story possibly of the year. Set off a run on stock markets around the world, and the UN Security Council went into emergency session because John Sargent didn't just announce that he was leaving Strictly Come Dancing. He summoned the world's media to a press conference. They went live on Sky Television, and Jeremy Paxman was there. Peter Mandelson issued a ministerial statement about it all. And Hazel Blair stepped in. I mean, it's John Sargent. He used to come on the News Quiz occasionally in the old days. Then he went off and thought he could better himself, said the idiot. Thought he could do it by playing the giddy goat on this dance programme, which he then did. And as he put it, it was a joke that got out of hand. Say that again.
I think Francis and I should resign because there is a danger that we might win this programme.
I didn't understand why the judges got so cross about somebody who patently wasn't very good at dancing turning out not to be good at dancing. They got very aggressive. I think, you know, as a retaliatory measure, we should cast the judges in something outside their comfort zone, you know, like strictly nuclear physics. You know, have them all out there, you know, with Stephen Hawking as a judge, you know, say, Bruno, your calculus stinks. I mean, that's true.
I quite like people trying things that they've never tried before. I mean, I think John Sargent dancing, we had Penny Smith singing, Jackie Smith trying to run the Home Office. I think these are...
It sounded a wee bit nasty on Strictly It Takes Two, the Claudia Winkleman programme.
And they heavens, you have watched all of these things.
I make no bones about it. And since this is being recorded, I am Sky Plussing it as we speak. But Sherry Lungi's partner, James Sumney, he was quite angry about it. And he said that John Sargent had timed his resignation to make the whole series about John Sargent. Oh, God, I've lost them.
Do you know, I feel we've reached a new low on the programme.
John Sargent was definitely going to win, though, because let's face the facts. If you're casting a vote and you've got two choices, you can either vote for the best dancer or you can vote to annoy Arlene Phillips. That is a no-brainer, isn't it? I mean, it'd be great to be producing the next series, wouldn't it, and sit Arlene down and tell her who the celebs are.
Be Stephen Hawking.
Yeah, Stephen Hawking. Got Stephen Hawking, John Prescott, Sooty.
I don't want it off because I've got a proposal in at BBC Scotland for Strictly Scottish Country Dancing. Me and Kirsty Wark.
There is a problem with Scottish country dancing, though.
What?
Fred, which is the quality of the calling.
Is it a calling? Is it like a vocation?
Yes, this is the biggest story of the week. Not Cameron's spending U-turn or the health of children in Haringey, but something far more important. John Sargent has quit Strictly Come Dancing. He has apparently irritated judges by remaining popular with the public. Much like hanging. People who voted for Sargent last week will get their money back, but people who actually watched the show will lose that hour of their lives forever. 2 points there to Francis. Fred, now I want you to be very careful not to upset Peter Hitchens of the Mail on Sunday, who attacked the News Quiz for its unchecked leftist propaganda. Yeah, it makes it sound like we need a cloakroom. Would you like to check your leftist propaganda? Anyway, who's furious about a leak?
This is the British National Party. A disgruntled member downloaded something like 13,500 names onto the internet. But if you have got an idle few minutes, may I suggest you download it? Because it makes for interesting reading, because it's on Excel, so you get this massive spreadsheet, and then you can just scroll down, and you press your mouse button, and it scrolls down, and you get sort of East Sussex and Eastbourne, and then it gets to Essex. And what you do then is you just put a weight on the scroll button on your mouse, and you go off and watch a rerun of The Great Escape, take your wife out for a three-course meal, come back, just as it moves on to Fockabers and Forrest. I did this, and the trouble we've had in the Macaulay household, because my wife, being the very organised lady that she is, she has started doing the Christmas card list, which we have on Excel. And I got a call from her today saying, "How many new friends have you got?"
There was a BNP man on the television news who was very angry about the leak and said it's appalling that people are being victimised just for their political views. And his exact words, he said, "Now we're living in a fascist state." I thought, well, you could try and look a bit pleased about it. The other thing he complained about, he said there are children's names on this list, and it's quite improper that these should be posted because these are people who have family membership. It turns out it's like the National Trust. You pay £40 and you can get family membership for all the family, including your children.
But they formed out of a split in the National Trust, did they?
One of them said that it had been a PR disaster for them. And I was thinking, yeah, just when it was all going so well.
Well, they've been doing this... I didn't realise they'd been doing this big Hearts and Minds thing in Stoke. They decided to go around and offer themselves up as community workers. They were ringing on people's doors and saying, "Can we mow your lawn?" And you think, I'm not sure I'd let the BNP mow my lawn. I don't, you come back and the grass has been cut in the shape of a swastika.
I feel that I should confess that I am a member of the National Trust.
My girlfriend's a member of the Royal Horticultural Society.
No.
Yeah. But it's... they will be upset. They'll complain about the programme and they'll say, oh, imagine if the kind of things that are said about us, imagine if they were said about blacks and Muslims. And that's like paedophiles saying, well, how would children feel if they were on the sex offenders register?
BNP are trying to reposition themselves as a serious political party. I mean, demonstrating that they're just as capable of losing personal data. Well, a list of the entire membership of the BNP has been leaked online and contains the names of police officers, soldiers and teachers. The BNP will be using the Human Rights Act to protect the identities... You don't have to write jokes, really, do you? will be using the Human Rights Act to protect the identities of its members, despite the BNP being against the European legislation. Good Lord, Nazis not in favour of going into Europe. 2 points to Fred. Jeremy, who has vowed to put an end to spend?
Oh, the Tories have gone weird. They've just buckled. They can't cope. It's the double act of Darling and Brown, sort of good jock, bad jock routine. The Tories have just buckled. They just can't manage, and they've just regressed and reverted to 80s conservatism. And you look at Osborne, and I hate to mock people for their social background, but you know that Osborne is a man for whom everything has always gone perfectly in his whole life. It's all been handed to him on a silver platter. And then something goes slightly out of whack, and he's just fallen to bits and he can't cope.
It's just the first time, I think, for ages, there's an actual policy difference between the two parties. I think I preferred it when it came down to who had the least frightening smile. I think
Osborne's in such a panic, he's having reverse elocution lessons. Yes. Because he's got this marvellously posh voice, a proper posh voice. He doesn't do that sort of consonant-free, floppy public school cockney like Peaches Geldof and Tony Blair. Like, oh, yeah. He doesn't do that. He's like proper old-fashioned public school. "Good evening, Ken and Fodder. We are the ruling class." So because he's got consonants, when he is taught to speak cockney, it will sound like a 1930s RADA-trained actor who's learnt cockney, and PMQs will be like, "Right honourable gentleman," more like, "Right perishing nana, Mr Speaker Governor."
What's worrying, I think, is that according to the polls, People are prepared to back Brown as Prime Minister while things are bad, but the moment that things are all right, they would ditch him for Cameron. So we've now, for the first time in our history, got a Prime Minister who has got a huge vested interest in keeping things as crappy as possible, which I think he's probably got a gift for, so he'll be all right.
David Cameron has dropped his pledge to match Labour spending plans from 2010, claiming they were unsustainable and will lead to tax rises later. Cameron hopes to position the Tories as the party of economic responsibility by cutting public spending, reducing corporation tax, and removing George Osborne's vocal cords. 2 points to Jeremy. And at the end of round one, the scores are exactly level at 4 points each. Round two with a cutting from the BBC News website.
Civic dignitaries will no longer throw coins to children at an annual fair after a risk assessment by St Ives Town Council said it could result in injury. Councillors voted to drop or roll the coins instead, but Mayor Ian Dobson said, "I don't think I'm actually going to roll them. I may drop them and I'll carry on tossing gently."
You dirty cow.
It's going to be that kind of evening, let's go.
Can I just say we saved that cutting, especially for Charlotte. Francis, who has been burned by their outrageous demands?
Oh, not Liam
Burned, yes.
He's a funny little fellow, isn't he?
He's extraordinary.
I think he's now the Cabinet Office Minister. He's a very weird chap. About 2 years ago, I got a message from him. I'd never even heard of him until then. And I got this message from his private office, whichever ministry, I think it was health at the time, saying, "Liam Byrne wants to meet you for breakfast." No explanation why. And I said, "Why?" And they said, "Well, he'll tell you when he sees you." So I agreed to do it. And then when the day arrived, I got a message from them saying, "The minister can't make it. It's cancelled. He'll be in touch to arrange it again soon." So I've been on tenterhooks ever since. No. And now, this wonderful 11-page memo has leaked. He wrote to staff, and this was 2 years ago, before he was even in the cabinet. It's called Working with Liam Byrne. He gave it to all his civil servants, saying, "I am a caffeine addict. I need a cappuccino when I come into the office, an espresso at 3 p.m, and soup at 12:30. He thinks soup is coffee.
Surely a mistake to be a complete tosser and ask for a cappuccino. I cannot think of a drink that's easier to conceal spittle in.
But also, he was sending this to civil servants, wasn't he? And I bet, you know, civil servants, they get this Working with Liam Byrne, all this, and they'll be thinking, "Yep, you won't be here next year."
But he had all these extraordinary strict requirements about how his papers were to be arranged.
And every memo that's sent to him has to be set in 16-point type.
Well, George Bush had a similar thing. They had to be crayon side up, I think.
I mean, the memo did read a little bit like a treatise on mental illness, didn't it? It was very obsessive. I mean, anybody that insecure about the exact arrival of their cappuccino time, I mean, probably shouldn't be out in public. I mean...
We should start putting in some requests, do you think, for doing the show?
Yeah.
A cup of tea be nice. The idea of a breakfast meeting, I'd just turn up sort of in my wife once in a dressing gown and say, "Have you got any cereal?" But it's probably a bit more high-powered than that, isn't it?
I don't like him now, though, because he mucked Francis about over there. Yeah. I think we should email him, invite him to breakfast and then not turn up ourselves.
Cabinet Minister Liam Byrne was left red-faced this week after an 11-page document listing how his staff should treat him was leaked to the press. The document is entitled Working with Liam Byrne and follows other government pamphlets, resigning with Peter Mandelson, resigning again with Peter Mandelson, and what lapse of judgment will it be this time, Lord Mandelson? Gordon Brown has a similar manual for staff. It just says, "Please give me a chance." 2 points to Francis. Jeremy, which political leader has gone Caracas?
Oh, Hugo Chavez. Who doesn't realise that Hugo's a fantastically posh name for a revolutionary leader? But Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, one thing he's doing with his opponents is not that authoritarian. Instead of arresting them and sort of banging them up and torturing them, he's bugging them, but then he is playing their embarrassing indiscretions on the telly. Isn't really the mark of a dictator. I mean, yes, he shouldn't be bugging them. But you see, that's what Brown should be doing with his opponents. He's bugging Cameron Osborne.
Have you met any paupers? I don't think so. I think the bin man might be a pauper, but I keep my distance. I think they have got scabies or something like that. And just put it on the telly.
But he isn't just broadcasting these things, as it were. He's adding comic sounds.
Yeah, for comic effect, yeah. And little animations and things. Oh, yeah, he's playing around. He's being creative with it.
What's the show called? Is it Hugo Chavez TV burp?
It is kind of like that. And I do think it's an appalling thing to do. And certainly we would never do anything like that in this country. But if we did, it would sound like this.
Today is the 9th anniversary of Tony Blair coming to power. And I want to talk to you straight about what's going on in our country. That means building on what Labour have got right, as well as changing what they've got wrong.
There's so many political broadcasts that would have been so much better if Neville Chamberlain had come back and said, peace in our time, and someone had gone... in the run-up to elections, Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez has been broadcasting wiretapped conversations of his political rivals, enhanced with cartoon sound effects. Actually, a lot of party political broadcasts could be enhanced by sound effects. There's that one where... John Major went to Brixton and said, it's still there, which would have benefited from the sound of gunshots ricocheting off the car roof. Nick Clegg, the leader of the Liberal Democrats, has already granted Chavez complete access to anything he says in the hope that someone somewhere might broadcast it. So 2 points to Jeremy. Andy, who has demanded the right to make a right royal Charlie of himself?
Is this Prince Charles saying that he wants to speak out as
it
king?
Is, yeah.
You know, because when he's king, it's not like he'll have privileged access to anything. Well, I have to say, I got a bit fed up, because last week was his 60th birthday, wasn't it? My brother turned 60 last year. We had a nice party. Prince Charles had 2 21-gun salutes, a comedy gala at a big theatre, a banquet, and a 1.5-hour documentary in prime time on BBC One.
Well, some brother you are.
What a palaver. He's just a number. He turned 60. Big deal. You know, it should have been a pair of socks. That should have been. No, and he said that he wants to be able to speak out on political matters, but, of course, that will raise great constitutional issues. And his mum, God bless her, has been a beacon of continuity and stability because she knows to keep a trap shut. I say that in the most respectful way, Mum. And anyway, she's got Philip as an outlet, hasn't she? I've always suspected that really her views, she kind of siphons them through Philip. Philip, say something rude about the Indians. Well, that's her way round it, isn't it? Yeah. I can't do it. It would destabilise democracy.
I'd like them.
But Charles is saying...
Do you do the whole royal family?
I don't really do the royal family. I do what everybody else does when they impersonate the male members of the royal family.
It was incredible.
Clench your jaw.
It's marvellous. It's as though you're in the room.
I know.
Well, this is the thing, I was trying to work this out, because if his mother lives as long as his grandmother did, he will be 79 by the time he gets a job, at which point all he'll be doing is muttering, I like biscuits. And what did I come in here for?
Yeah. He's got the world record, hasn't he, for he's the longest serving heir now, I think. But no one else has waited this long for power without killing their parent.
Talking about the various names that he might use as king, he could be Charles III. Apparently he could also opt, inexplicably change his name, to George VII, or possibly Ethelred the I've been ready for bloody ages. Prince Charles wants the role of the monarch changed to allow him to speak his mind. Currently, the Queen meets with the Prime Minister once a week. He apprises her of the state of the country and important political matters, and she offers him a chocolate hobnob and a tip for the 2:30 at Haydock Park. Prince Charles's views were passed on through his friend Jonathan Dimbleby. Under British constitutional arrangements, when a reigning Dimbleby dies, another one succeeds him as presenter of Question Time. 2 points to Andy there. And I can tell you, at the end of round two, the scores are still level with 8 points each. Before we start round three, here is a bit of window dressing displayed in the Cambridge University Press bookshop.
Green bags, available in 6 colours.
And our thanks to Sarah MacDonald of Cambridge for sending us that. Francis, who doesn't give a 4X about Xmas?
About Xmas? So, 4X, I thought it was going to be the Australian film.
It is? Australians?
No. We know.
It's, it says here... Oh. It's no, it's... No, it's something to do with the Navy.
Yes.
He knows.
Do you want to give Fred time to write the whole thing
no,
out
Fred
for you?
No, Fred just speak it.
And they get a long holiday over Christmas. The Australian Navy. That's all
two
you
months.
Know.
They're having 2 months off. Mm-hmm. But all that the Australian Navy does, it doesn't go out fighting Somali pirates, which I just want to know if Somali pirates go, arr, in Somali.
Why couldn't they just pick on someone their own size? If they're in the summer, they'd gone to the Aegean and nicked Deripaska's boat when Osborne and Mandelson were on board. Then we'd see how tough these bloody pirates are up against Mandelson. It'd be like Peter Pan and Wendy taking on Captain Hook. Lovely. And then all Mandelson has to say is, I know where you live. And they say, please, please, not that. He'd but see them off.
All the Australian Navy does is try and stop immigrants from getting to Australia, which is a bit bloody rich, isn't it? And you think Australia trying to stop immigrants, it's the size of Europe and has a population the size of Sevenoaks. And still it's Fortress Australia.
Did you not think it was odd, though? I mean, 2 months off, if you're planning to be defenceless for 2 months, why would you make that the subject of a press release? If there is a Somali pirate ship that gets the Guardian delivered, there's going to be a whole heap of trouble. Did you know that the Australian Navy has only got enough submariners to operate half of its 6 submarines?
That'd be 3.
It's the accountant in you, Fred. You can't help but he cut it out.
Can't resist it.
The Australian Navy has been given a 2-month Christmas break. Australia, or New Zealand's West Island, as it'll be known after the invasion, wants a family-friendly service. The Australian Defence Minister, Joel Fitzgibbon, said he also wants to help, I like this bit, Navy personnel work from home. So... work from home. What do you do? Sit in the bath with a rifle? Australian sailors have a fearsome reputation and since World War II have sunk nearly 12 billion tinnies. I'm going to give you 1 point for that, Francis. I don't think it was a fulsome answer. Yeah. Fred, who should cut off their nose to enhance their face?
Is this yet another survey?
Yep.
Good.
Oh, sorry, 2 points to Fred there. I apologise. I'm not paying full attention.
It's women like the look of a man if he's got a facial scar in preference to somebody that hasn't got a facial scar if they're looking for a brief relationship. Okay? But it's multiple choice. Did you find the person with the scar on his face more attractive, maybe attractive after 10 Bacardi breezers? Wouldn't touch him with a barge pole. Wouldn't touch him with your barge pole. I think there was a similar survey for men on a website, hasitgotapulse.com. They showed blokes pictures of naked women and said, did you find the one with the scar on her face more or less attractive? And they said, what face?
Did they show pictures of the same man with or without the scars?
I think they must have done that, yeah.
Or maybe they just got a bloke and said, here he is, without scars, then slashed his face with the Stanley knife. Oh, yeah.
It was Harrison Ford, wasn't it? They said he was proof of it.
Yeah.
But it seems to me that surely in most women's mind they'll be going, it's Indiana Jones. I mean, the scar is secondary. Where is his scar anyway? I've never noticed he has a scar.
I've never examined him that closely.
Someone's pointing at their chin. He's got a scar on. Isn't it just a dimple?
That's Kirk Douglas, the chin dimple.
That does look odd, though. That Kirk Douglas one looked like he leant on a pencil for years.
Yeah. But no. Michael's got it as well, so the pencil's obviously been handed down through the
According to psychologists at the universities of Liverpool and Stirling, facial scars make men more attractive to women. Men with facial scars are seen as dangerous. So are unlicensed minicab drivers. I wouldn't want to fling with one. So 2 points there to Fred. Andy, where has... Now, be very careful with this story. Where has womankind had one small slip?
Oh! Yeah, yeah. In space, nobody can hear you flounder. All right, Sandy. Well, how can I put this?
Yeah.
A woman astronaut did a slightly, you know, if you were going to go down that cliched, caricatured path,
Out with it, Andy.
The daft girlie dropped her bag. That's what happened. She was up there, she was multi-skilling, she was probably on the phone to her friends, making some kind of list, and she forgot she was in space, she had a big bag of tools, off they went, she said, oh my lord, oh God, could someone get that for me? Oh no, I'm in space on my own, I can't.
But at least she didn't, you know, the rocket didn't set off with her bag on the roof of the rocket.
She didn't make them go back for it, did she? She didn't say, if you love me, you'd go back for the tour.
The newspapers have predictably had a field day after astronaut Heidi Marie Stephenson-Piper let her tool bag drift away during a spacewalk to fix a solar panel on the International Space Station. Can I just say, all those sexist jokes in the paper were really unfair. This is a highly trained astronaut who happened to lose a bag containing very sophisticated tools, OK? Now, admittedly, she went out to the solar mirrors to check her lipstick, but I don't think that is the case. I don't think she'd have ever left the space shuttle unless she'd needed directions after the male astronauts were too embarrassed to ask the way. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings that the teams have brought along. Mr. Ween.
Sandy, Andrew Skinner has very kindly provided me with this from the Oxford Times. An 18-year-old man appeared at Oxford Crown Court on Monday, charged with causing grievous bodily harm. Ian Mulligan of Elm Terrace, Littlemore, was granted bail until the 5th of January, on condition that he lives in Glasgow.
Fred.
This has been sent in by Ms. Kathleen Barber from Suffolk, and she spotted in the paper, breaking and entering, a teenager in Adelaide, Australia, was arrested after smashing glass on a front door to break into the premises. This was a relatively easy job for the officers, as the building he had broken into was the police station.
Andy.
This is from Richard O. Smith, and it is the title of a standard textbook for students. The front cover of the book, it's entitled Business Ethics, but then emblazoned with bright red letters under the title, Not for Sale in the United States.
Let's take a look at the final score. Francis and Fred have got 11 points, but this week's winners are Jeremy and Andy with 12. Here is a cutting from a recent South Buckinghamshire District Council newsletter sent in by John Rossetti.
South Buckinghamshire District Council would like to advise that the official opening of the refurbished all-weather area at Evram Sports Centre has been cancelled due to inclement weather.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Ween, Fred McCauley, Jeremy Hardy and Andy Hamilton. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news is read by me, Charlotte Green. The chair script was written by Simon Littlefield, Rodri Crooks and Danielle Ward, with additional material by Stephen Carlin and James Sherwood. The producer was Victoria Lloyd.